We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of October 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here to take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon. And we'll hear a story on why so many dairy cows are heading for harvest, but not so many in the state of Illinois. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat at $4.94 and a quarter, down 9.5 cents. The March at $5.14, down 9.25, and the May at $5.27, down 9.25. December corn today, 13.5 cents lower at $3.66. The March at $3.79 and a quarter, down 13.25. And May corn futures, $3.88 and a quarter, down 13.25. July contract, $3.96 and a half, down 13. September at $4.03 and three quarters. Down 12.5 cents. Soy complex now, November beans, $9.78, 7.5 cents lower. January at $9.76 and a half, down 10.5. The March at $9.75, down 12.5. And the May futures at $9.70, 13.75 lower at $9.70 for the May. July contract, $9.72 and a half, down 13.5. The August at $9.70, down 13.25. December bean meal, $2.97. Even, and it finished the day $1.70 lower. January futures at $289.50 a ton, down 20 cents, rather up 20 cents. And December bean oil, $36.40, off $1.12. January at $36.86, down $1.11. October live cattle futures, $3 lower at $81.65. December at $85.67 and a half, down 60 cents. November feeders at $94.80, 20 cents higher. January futures up a nickel at $95.75. And the December futures at $56.70. And the lean hogs finished 50 cents lower. February contract there at $63.60, finished up 42.5 cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $77 even a barrel, down $2.87 today. January at $77.64, down $2.76. November ethanol, $1.93 and a half, 2 cents lower. Natural gas at $5.04 and 8 tenths of a cent, down $0.01 and 4 tenths. The RBOB at $1.94 and 3 tenths. That's gasoline, down 7.5 cents. And diesel fuel or heating oil at $1.96 and a half, 8 and 9 tenths lower. Gold futures at $1,039.70, down $6.70 on its settlement price. And the Dow now at 9,733, just about 228 points lower. The CRB index at 270.42, down 5.74. If you're wondering about the propane futures, they've gone off the board permanently. They stopped trading at low volume, so the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Group, that's the CME Group, got rid of that contract. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A flash flood watch is in effect for most of central and southern Illinois. That until 7 p.m. A flood watch is in effect for northeastern and portions of central Illinois and far northwestern Indiana. That until 7 p.m. as well. Tonight in northern and west central Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy. Elsewhere in Illinois and northwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy. A few lingering showers during the evening hours. In eastern and southern Indiana, cloudy, some rain. That'll taper to scattered showers after midnight. Those will range from 35 in northwestern Illinois to 50 in the southeastern parts of Indiana. Tomorrow, some lingering showers in eastern Indiana. Otherwise, partly to mostly cloudy. Highs will range tomorrow from 48 in northwestern Illinois to 58 in the south. And then the extended forecast, it says a few scattered showers may occur Monday, especially in northern sections. Amounts should remain light, mostly under a tenth of an inch, and coverage under 50%. More on the agriculture weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Mike Zuzolo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Happy Friday, Todd. Happy wet Friday.
Happy wet Friday. Happy Halloween. It's scary, I suppose, if you're a producer. You've got a down day and rain, more rain. A lot more rain, 100% saturation in the southern part of the state of Illinois. The guys in Iowa have slowed down. They had rain. The guys in Indiana, Ohio, Illinois all stopped. The Delta is stopped. And my gosh, why would the market decide to go lower?
That's what hurts so bad is at least the last couple of weeks while we've watched the rain and the wind blow and the harvest progress get more and more delayed, at least the market was on our side. I think it's a simple case of the fact that 3 weeks ago, up until this past week, Todd, the market was very, very centered on demand, especially the outside markets. We were seeing that the riskier assets were being bought, the commodities, the stocks, and that was because of earnings and weaker dollar. Granted, the earnings numbers that came out, for the most part, that were better than expected, if you read into them in any detail, you saw that it was because of their cost-cutting and their budgetary changes they made that improved their earnings. This week, however, and starting late last week, you know, a week ago when we talked, the market was looking a little vulnerable. And I think the market is turning back to the idea that demand is not so great, it's not so hot, and we had personal spending, consumer confidence, new home sales, jobless claims. They were all pretty bad this week on the economic front, and they could more than offset the better-than-expected gross domestic product figure. So I think what's happening in the Chicago mindset is Chicago is looking at New York right now, and they're not looking at supply. They're not looking at how far behind we are, how much rain we've had. They're looking at the big picture demand and worried about the consumer as we go into the holiday season.
Well, I'm wondering about that. Are they looking there because, like the rest of agriculture, they're confused by what this really means in terms of fundamentally how big or small or if the crop changes at all? But we just haven't ever been through such a fall as this. Certainly not in recent memory, and probably not in the far distant memory either.
Right. I think that's a huge point because, you know, It's like a fellow I was watching an American Experience this past week on the crash of 29, and this fellow said this happens every generation because our memory of history is only generational long. I think that is definitely an element here. I think the other element goes back to what I look at from a standpoint of the end user and the commercial, because I feel so important. I feel as though that the cash and the basis is so important to turning this market around in terms of a major turn, a long-lasting turn. What does the commercial and the end user feel like right now? I think they feel just like a person does that doesn't want to spend that much money, doesn't want to buy any more than he has to, and just wants to lock in hand-to-mouth needs. And I think it goes back to they're more worried about the future demand not being there than they are about what kind of supply problems we're facing right now. And having said that, I think it's really important to notice today rice was up 2%, the highest in 9 months, because the trade is worried about the supply side. So I think the first thing is what you said. The second thing is how the end user thinks. The third thing, I think, is boils down to a simple element of timing. The market's just not ready to look at the supply side yet, but I think they will soon.
If memory serves, and I may be way wrong on this, but I believe that the United States is the world's largest rice exporter.
Correct.
Don't know about producer, but
no,
exporter.
You're right. We're very small in production, but we're the largest exporter.
So rice being up would tell us the delta. They're very concerned about the delta and production there. But does it have much of an impact across the rest of the agricultural commodities?
Yes, because one of the major reasons why rice was up, other than our own delta, was India's drought and their problems with their domestic rice production. And if you recall, the big rally that we had back in 07 that lasted into 08 actually started in the rice pits, and then it moved over into the wheat and then into the others. Now, I'm not calling for that here, but what I'm getting at is the trade in the feed grains especially. I posed this question to myself earlier today. Would grains, especially wheat and corn, have found more support off of these supply problems you and I are talking about had it not been for the weak cash basis we continue to see, and especially the poor weekly export sales yesterday for corn and wheat? I think it would have, and I think the answer to that's pretty easy to see, because the meal was up today on a close,
right,
and the beans were only down 7. I think the reason the meal and the beans were up was because of this supply and demand issue and the strong demand that is being shown in this week after week weekly export sales figure. So I just think it's a hatching of the egg timing issue when it comes to the corn and wheat, and we have to get a little bit farther down the road and get these outside markets too correct. I quite frankly think that they were way overdone given the economic strength that we had. And this week the realization hit us by these economic reports that and also some of the stimulus money that has been spent, how much or how little good it did. We're kind of on our own now in the financial markets, and you can kind of see that because the banks are the ones getting hit the hardest on Wall Street today.
All right. So are you long-term bullish, bearish, friendly, neutral to the corn and the bean and the wheat markets?
I'm exactly where we were last week. I really think the beans and the meal are going to bottom first here in the short term, and then because of big acres, they're going to have a tough time holding their gains.
In South America, that is.
Exactly. And worldwide, I think even here in the United States, if we can't get any better cash price on corn with this type of harvest progress that we're seeing, I think a lot of producers are going to switch back over to beans again next year in the United States, too. So, and in corn and wheat, I think that we have to wait for this push down, this pullback down. We'll see what the harvest progress numbers say Monday, but I think more importantly is, does the dollar... The problem with the corn and the wheat is because they have this weak demand personality to them, you've got to wait for the outside markets to heal up. And the problem with that is the volatility index that we keep track of, it's the highest since it's been back in July. Well, guess what? The S&P was only trading about 875 back in July, Todd, and it's at 1040 right now, and that's being down 2.5%. So we've got to wait on the wheat and corn, I think, to get it healed up. Once we go below 350 corn, if the cash basis comes back around, then I think we're near the bottom.
Right, and then anything else I had to add before, or you should add before I let you go for the day? I could add something, but I don't want to. So
I think that'll do it. I just hope the people that are listening know that the market is going to realize how far behind they are at some point in time. I mean, I've done more psychological advice and keeping your chin up type advice, and I have market advice this week, and it really bothers me that the market's acting this way. But I think our time will come where we'll be able to get some of this back.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Hey, that's Mike Zuzlow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting and joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. If you'd like to hear Mike again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the agricultural news for the afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In agricultural news, House Democrats yesterday unveiled their proposed health care reform legislation. According to a new report by the Health and Human Services Department, rural residents have a large stake in the outcome of the health care debate. According to the report, health care insurance reform would give individuals living in rural areas better access to health care coverage. And it says health insurance reform would provide people in rural areas with access to affordable, comprehensive health insurance and a wider network of health care providers practicing in rural areas. Rural residents make up one-fifth of the nearly 8.5 million uninsured Americans. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission's Agricultural Advisory Committee did not take action yesterday on a proposal to improve convergence in the Chicago Board of Trade wheat futures contract, leaving great uncertainty in the market. Members of the committee say they want to gather more information about the problem. Discussions about the poor performance of the wheat contract have been going on for years as cash prices have remained below futures. The CME group and a CFTC subcommittee have recommended regulators approve a variable storage rate for Chicago Board of Trade wheat to narrow the cash futures gap. Analysts say the expected lifting of China's ban on pork imports from the U.S. could result in, at best, a modest rise in sales. Glenn Grimes, agricultural economist at the University of Missouri, says that the swine disease problems that China had in 2007 have been resolved. The swine herd has been expanded. Extra demand driven by the 2008 Summer Olympics is gone, and the Chinese government has been purchasing surplus domestic pork. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk announced yesterday that China agreed to lift their ban on pork, but did not set a date. Meanwhile, the U.S. Agriculture Department will soon begin a review of China's food safety laws and poultry plants with an eye to allowing imports of Chinese poultry products. A USDA official says that the U.S. should step up its efforts to develop cellulosic ethanol. Rajiv Shah, USDA Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics, says, quote, "Right now, there are not sufficient partnerships between private and public partners. Current research programs are not sufficient for the amounts of crops needed and the creation of entirely new commodity sectors, and we're not doing nearly enough to make that happen." And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can visit us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, we'll hear about the health of the dairy industry in the nation and why Illinois producers have a competitive advantage.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
We're killing dairy cows in the United States. That's what the headlines say, and it's true. Well, at least in some states, but not in Illinois, says University of Illinois dairy specialist Mike Hutchins.
Well, certainly there's been comments in the news that we're killing cows in the United States, and that is correct. We basically, because of supply and demand, and the problem in the demand is the recession. We just don't have foreign markets anymore. Consumers aren't buying quite as much dairy products. We have 300,000 too many cows in the United States. We can't drink all that milk, eat all that cheese. So if we're going to get supply and demand into balance, we have to get rid of, harvest, slaughter 300,000 cows.
Dairy farmers collectively have been proactive on this front for several years. They recognized long ago the overcapacity in the industry and organized CWT, or cooperatives working together, to stabilize milk supply. CWT's whole herd dairy buyout is one of those proactive steps. The organization, dairy farmers with their own money, buys whole herds out of production. What's happening now in the industry is a bit deeper than that, says Hutchins. It goes to the heart of the financial crisis in the U.S. economy and is being felt where the housing crisis struck its deepest blows.
And it's really happening on the West Coast, primarily on the West Coast, because one, their milk price is $1 per hundredweight, per 100 pounds less than we see in the Midwest and the Northeast. Their feed costs are $1 higher, so they're getting squeezed really, really hard. And so some of these 2,000 and 3,000 cow herds are losing $250,000 a month. And this started in January. And so the question is, how long do you continue to lose equity and value? And so they finally deciding, or the bank is deciding, it's time to get out of the dairy industry. And so these cows are going to be slaughtered and have been slaughtered. Over 250,000 cows have been slaughtered. A milk price, the milk supply is starting to come back into line. Prices are starting to increase slightly. And so it is happening.
Happening, meaning the milk supply is coming in line with demand. The good news here is for dairies in the state of Illinois. There were 102,000 cows in the state last spring, and that's still the case. Hutchins says it's because Illinois has a couple of competitive advantages. First, milk prices here are higher, and feed prices are lower.
Second of all, we have lots of acreage on most dairy farms, so they actually raise the crop. They don't have to write a check for alfalfa for corn and corn silage. Much of the labor is family labor, and so you just kind of pull back, just like everybody else in the recession. You don't eat out as much. You probably can't do certain things. You can't go on vacation. So these farmers can pull back on labor because they're not actually paying the labor as far as that goes. And then the other part is we didn't have a lot of debt load. A lot of our dairymen did not expand like many of the West Coast farms did a year or two earlier when they had very good milk prices. And so that banker isn't knocking on the door every day.
Oh, and one other advantage in the state of Illinois, the really cool weather last summer caused less heat stress in the cows, and they produced 5% more milk each. Well, bad for supply, but good for Illinois dairy farmers.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Rainfall, I know, has producers worried. Are they more worried about getting their beans out or getting their corn out?
Getting their corn out.
Yeah.
Beans, we're in pretty good shape from people being done to a lot of people with 1 to 3 days running. Space-wise, we're pretty good shape on soybeans. I think that if we get a few nice days back-to-back and finally get beans dry enough that they can combine, we can see them come out in a hurry.
And it seems to me that the maturity on the beans is so far now that even when it's wet, they actually can run them through the combines pretty easily, or at least that's what I've been told. On the corn, though, they're going to have to stay out simply because those fields won't dry out. They're covered. And it's going to be a while before they can get back into them.
It's going to be several days. I mean, I have a tendency to overestimate how long it'll take. It always amazes me how quick they can get back in the field. But we have had a lot of water.
Oh, it's been a soaker, man. At this time of the year, with that much crop out, it's just ugly. Cash basis still holding really strong. I would think it would have to be.
Corn basis continues to hang in there. I think that, you know, you look at nearby corn, it's moved maybe 1 or 2 cents in 30 days and is at historically pretty tight levels. And I don't really see a reason for that to stop. Just the fact that we're going to drag this harvest out so far, and our constraint is going to be dryers. It's not going to be logistics. It's not going to be dumping capacity or storage space. So as we drag that harvest out, I think that your end users are going to want to keep buying and keep the trains full and moving. So that could keep the basis at relatively good levels.
Did you buy much corn yesterday on the pop in the market?
We bought some, but it wasn't a huge day. We probably actually bought more beans and corn compared to relative.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 347 and 966.
All right. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. You can listen to what he has to say again anytime you'd like on our webpage at willag.org. That's willag.org. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, about the weather forecast for the weekend and beyond.
It's National Candy Corn Day. Candy corn has been around for more than a century. It was created in the 1880s by George Renninger of the Wonderly Candy Company. Originally, candy corn was made by hand. candy corn's introduction gained instant popularity among farmers due to its appearance of an actual piece of corn. Additionally, the tricolor scheme, white, yellow, and orange, on a single candy was revolutionary in its day. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, the first commercial installation of U.S. ball bearings was made on a weather vane on top of a church in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. In 1815, Andrew Jackson Downing was born, an American horticulturalist. He was author of The Fruits and Fruit Trees of America and editor of the Horticulturalist periodical. In 1823, Edmund Cartwright died, an English inventor. He created the first power loom, a device that revolutionized weaving by changing it from a manual process into a mechanical one. By 1850, Cartwright's designs were used in over 250,000 machines in England. But Cartwright was not much of a businessman. He went bankrupt in 1793. And in 1894, the first U.S. patent for a time clock was issued to Daniel Cooper of Rochester, New York. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg joins us from the Illinois State Water Survey, the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It all belongs to NOAA. And he's been out measuring the water this afternoon. Boy, what a lot of rainfall we are getting and having, and how much has been around.
Glug, glug, yeah. Well, we just checked out here about 2:15 because we were rapidly approaching a new October record rainfall here. Looks like we're going to fall short. As of 2:15, we had another 8,200s today, which brings our monthly total to about 8.78. The record for the month is 9.01 for Champaign-Urbana, and pretty much the rain, heavier rain, is all over with and east of here now. So, doesn't look like we'll hit the record. I don't think anybody's complaining about that. But tremendous amounts of rain throughout the state, especially this month, 2 to 3 times normal across much of the Midwest and the Corn Belt. So obviously, other than that one period a couple days last week where we got every people into the field, the harvest has come to a halt. The good news is, Todd, that looks like we might actually end up here with an extended period of drier weather for the first part of November here. So that's pretty optimistic and actually pretty encouraging at this point.
Oh, tell me more about that, please.
Well, we're in a what we call a tending to go into what we call a zonal flow, a west to east flow across the country. The good thing about that is the weather systems tend to move quickly enough where they're not going to gather moisture like this one did and pound us with inches of rain. But it looks like we will get a couple of fronts through here next week, and not very strong. And they may kick off a few little showers here and there, but other than slowing things down maybe for a couple of hours, I don't think we'll have much of an impact. The downside to a zonal flow like that is it tends to be somewhat unstable, and we could get, later next week or next weekend or soon after the pattern switching back to a large ridge trough pattern, which we tend to get more storms like this. But it looks like next week is going to be pretty darn nice compared to the month of October.
Yeah, zonal flows, do they come around along with much wind?
It can, but it looks like we will get in, as the high pressure moves to our east early next week, we'll get into some good southwesterly winds, which should start helping dry things out, getting at least air circulating through the crops in the field and get some of that standing water off the ground. But we've had so much rain that it's going to take days for the air to absorb all this and to evaporate it, move it out, and get things to the shape where you can get into the fields and actually get some work done.
Last week, you USDA's Illinois Office of NASS reported that Southern Illinois was 100% saturated for their soils. Are we going to add other parts of the state to that category this week?
Yeah, we'll probably add significant parts of Western and Central Illinois. Western Illinois, north of St. Louis to roughly Quincy, got pounded last night. The radar indicated rainfall is a pretty high, in fact, in excess of 4 inches in parts of that area. So that, southwestern Illinois really got hit hard. And then a whole corridor, right, basically up I-55 into the Chicago area, got substantial rainfall as well. So considering this isn't the time of year we see a lot of evaporation, we'll see a lot of saturated soils.
Thank you so much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, home to Illinois Public Media and the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a very good weekend.